Ian O'Connor is a senior writer at ESPN.com and a nationally acclaimed sports columnist. His new book is Belichick, The Making of the Greatest Football Coach of All Times. Belichick is perhaps the most fascinating figure in the NFL. As head coach of the New England Patriots, he's led the team to 5 Super Bowl championship trophies. Again, the name of the new book is Belichick. It is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, and it's a pleasure to welcome Ian O'Connor to the roundtable this morning. Ian, thank you very much for being with us.
How are you, Joe?
I'm fine. Thank you very much for being on the program. This is a big book about a guy who seems to be multifaceted and in some ways very much an enigma. I am curious as to what brought you to him as a subject.
Well, I've always thought, Joe, he was the most fascinating sports figure in America, and I don't think there's a close second. And I wrote a column 18 years ago in 2000 saying it was a bad hire in New England to make this hire. And I think a lot of people, I would say 75% of the NFL, agree with me. I know all of Cleveland did after his losing seasons there. And the New York Giants organization that loved him as an assistant coach and thought he was the equal of Vince Lombardi and Tom Landry as an assistant there never thought he would be a successful head coach. So he proved a lot of people wrong, and I was fascinated to find out how and why. And that's why I interviewed 350 people to try to get that answer, and I wanted to paint a full human portrait of the man, and I think I pulled it off.
Absolutely. So let us begin with, why did people doubt him in the beginning?
Well, you start with the four losing seasons out of 5 in Cleveland. That was part of it, of course. But it was more than that. It was his personality, at least his public personality, was not one that matched up with the notion of a successful head coach, a leader of an organization and franchise and team. And the Giants, George Young was the general manager of the Giants when Bill Parcells was the head coach and Belichick was the defensive coordinator. And George Young thought Parcells and before him Ray Perkins were leaders. They had charisma. They had a certain look. And he did not see any of that in Belichick. And he just didn't personally like him, for one. George Young was a tough guy out of Baltimore, and he thought suburban Baltimore types who played lacrosse weren't real athletes. And so it's kind of funny when you look back on some of the things that made the decision for George Young to go with other people to coach that franchise. But you put all that together, and Belichick was not someone who, going into New England, inspired a lot of faith. But Robert Kraft made the greatest hire in league history by not listening to an awful lot of people who told him he was making a big mistake.
Which seems to be the way that a lot of people look at the Patriots now and look at New England now, that that's a place where not only if you've had trouble elsewhere, you may have a place here in New England. Is that the team, or is that a Belichick Kraft creation?
I think it's a Belichick Kraft Brady creation, too, because Brady is the ultimate first one in the gym, last one out of the gym athlete. He sets a tone for every player in that organization. He takes below market value contracts to allow the Patriots to add talent around him under the salary cap. And there's nobody who works harder. He works as hard, if not harder, than the last guy on the roster, and he's the greatest football player of all time. So I think he has a lot to do with it as well. But there have been athletes they've taken in over the years, whether it be Corey Dillon and Randy Moss in earlier years, who had troubles elsewhere, and they seem to adopt and embrace the Patriot way of doing business and playing football. It doesn't always work. They've brought Aaron Hernandez is the most tragic example of a player they gambled on and lost in a staggering way. But that system or that philosophy built on attention to detail, practicing situational football, just outworking people, out-detailing people, most of that is Belichick. And I think Brady and Kraft fill in around the edges of that program. But that is a very much a Belichickian dynasty there.
So as for Belichick himself and coming to New England and Kraft gambling on him, what did Kraft give him that allowed him to find his way?
He gave him some room, Joe, and I think the marriage between Belichick and Art Modell in Cleveland was doomed at the start because Belichick is the ultimate substance over style coach, and Modell was the ultimate style over substance owner. It was a terrible marriage. With Kraft, he connected with him in a way because he was with him with Parcells when they went to the Super Bowl years earlier, and Kraft and Parcells couldn't stand each other, and Belichick and Kraft liked each other. So he had that in Robert Kraft, an owner he believed in, an owner who believed in him, and gave him pretty much personnel control. I think the only times Robert Kraft ever imposed his ownership will on Belichick in terms of personnel was when he gave Drew Bledsoe $100 million way back when at the start of the program. In 2007, when Belichick wanted to move out Troy Brown, Robert Kraft wanted him to stay one more year because he'd been a very good Patriot. And then, of course, the Garoppolo trade. And that was a big one and probably the biggest of the three, just given where Brady was in his career. And many thought that Garoppolo, because of his age, was the better choice. But at the end of the day, I actually think Kraft and the Patriots and Belichick made the right choice in trading Garoppolo and keeping Brady. I just don't think you can trade Tom Brady. I think he is still at the top of his game, at the top of the league, and he's an iconic player. And so I would have gone with Brady over the younger replacement as well.
You write a lot in the book about people who played for Belichick's father, and as well as you interviewed them. And there is a lot to Belichick's story in regards to his dad and what he learned from him. Give us a sense of that upbringing and how important those early formative years were.
Well, in a football context, Joe, I think being around the Naval Academy and Steve, the way he treated some of the players there told me that Steve not only coached them to be really good football players, but he realized he was coaching them to be combat officers and soldiers, and that was what that experience at the Academy at Annapolis was all about. So precision, execution, playing and protecting your brother to your right and left. I mean, those were things that Bill learned from his father, Steve. But also in a personal context, Steve Belichick was in the U.S. military during World War II, stationed on Okinawa, and he was in an officers' club. And one of the first black officers in the U.S. Navy, Samuel Barnes, walked in one day, and every white officer in there walked out except one, Steve Belichick, who befriended the man. They became roommates for a short period of time. And so that's 9-10 years before Brown versus Board of Ed in the Supreme Court, 3 years before Jackie Robinson at Ebbets Field. Steve Belichick was way ahead of his time in terms of race relations in this country. And I think when people look at Bill and how does a guy like that connect with the modern athlete, particularly the African-American athlete, you can find it in his upbringing. His mother, Jeanette, and his father, Steve, that's the way they taught Bill to look at people and treat people. And I think that did shape him in a profound way as a human being.
Many people wonder, I think fans wonder, and you go a long way to answer this in the book, but I think probably many fans see the guy at the podium after a game and wonder, why would anybody play for this guy and why would anybody do anything that he wanted them to do if that's the way that he treats his players? Which the obvious answer, of course, that's probably not the way he treats his players.
That's right. He's created a one-dimensional character that he plays on TV, but that's not who he is. And friends and associates of his told me, away from the facility, he is kind and generous and even charming and engaging. And so I know, talking to players behind the scenes, and players in Cleveland did not feel this, but players in New England say that you can tell one-on-one in his office, he cares about you as a person. He gets that across to you. In Cleveland, I never heard that from the players, and the results were what they were. But I think Bill is not a one-dimensional character. He just, at the podium, I think he's setting an organizational tone for his players. We're in the business of gathering information. We're not in the business of sharing it. So he sets that tone by giving minimal information to every answer, setting a grim tone. So his players follow suit in the locker room when media asks them questions. And that's a core belief in his program. But away from the facility or behind closed doors with his players, he can be a very human guy. I just think most of America has a hard time picturing that, but it's true.
You do see it at the end of games when, in the rare moments that the camera lingers on him, when he is congratulating players from an opposing side after a well-fought battle.
That's true. You do. There have even been warm moments with Brady after Super Bowl victories where they're embracing each other and saying things about what it means to each other. And I think that that relationship has been very transactional over the years, but there are those moments, and you do see a glimpse here and there of that coach. And the one thing about Belichick, I don't know if a lot of football fans realize this, but he, and maybe coaches say this all the time, but after losses, he always blames himself and the coaching staff. When the players win, he says it's about the players, and I really think he means that. I think that's genuine. After his most devastating defeat, his loss to the Giants in Super Bowl 42, when he had a chance to go 19-0 and go down as the greatest team of all time, one of the poignant scenes in the book, a couple of players describe it to me, he walked into that room of broken athletes, just completely broken men, and he blamed himself. He only talked for about 2 minutes, but he didn't try to make it a we failure. He made it about himself, and he mentioned a couple of things he did wrong in that game. And I think that's one of his finest moments as a head coach. I really do, if not his finest. He walked out of that room, and Dante Stallworth told me that it was like he just faded to black. And that was one of the scenes I enjoyed painting in the book because I think it says a lot about him as a head coach.
This gets back to an earlier question and an answer that you gave about the Kraft, Belichick, Brady troika. But when it comes to writing about Bill Belichick, it seems like it's almost impossible not to be writing a somewhat of a biography of Tom Brady as well.
Yeah, that's right. Their partnership is the greatest in NFL history, and you wonder, what would Belichick have done without Brady? What would Brady have accomplished without Belichick? I think each is worth at least one championship ring to the other. I do believe if you gave Belichick a quarterback who was capable, proven capable of winning at least one championship, Belichick would add at least one to that person's legacy, and I feel the same with Brady. So they've been a perfect marriage, even though there has been no real affection in it, and I think the unrelenting style of coaching over 18 years, along with the benching of Malcolm Butler in the Super Bowl and the way that Belichick cut access to Brady's trainer and business partner, Alex Guerrero, those things all came together to present the problem that we saw in public view last year when there was a fracture in the relationship. And that partnership barely survived it, but I think they're functioning now, back to functioning. And I suspect over the next 2-3 years, they'll find a way to win number 6, and that'll be it.
When you think about the people who have worked with Belichick on the sidelines, coaches, and I mean, we see this most recently, and people who have left, that there is a whole class of coaches and assistant coaches who have learned from Bill Belichick.
No question. He's got his coaching tree now. A number of these assistants who've gone on to become a head coach elsewhere haven't succeeded. And I guess the two most conspicuous examples are Eric Mangini in New York and Cleveland and Josh McDaniels in Denver. And there have been a couple others, but they tried to be Bill Belichick, and they weren't. And they didn't have the credibility, the resume, and more importantly, they didn't have Tom Brady at quarterback in their team. So I think if you're not yourself, players see that ultimately and stop playing for you. So Josh McDaniels is going to get a second opportunity. He probably will succeed Bill in Foxborough. So it'll be interesting to see, because he's a really bright guy, he's a great offensive coach, how he handles being a head coach the second time around. Belichick learned from his mistakes in Cleveland, not connecting with players on a human level, and we'll see if McDaniels does the same thing.
You write about two major events in the history of this franchise, Deflategate and Spygate. Just the fact that any team would have two gates to it says a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Well, the second gate, Deflategate, Belichick was never identified as having done anything wrong in that case, other than this happened in his program, but he was not attached to any wrongdoing personally. Spygate's a little different. Spygate was his baby. He wanted to make Deflategate Brady's, and he had his gate, which was spying and illegally filming opponents from the sideline and filming their signals during games. So I really, in studying that, don't think that really secured the Patriots a sizable advantage. And I think the risk was greater than the reward. And the question, and Belichick did not cooperate with this project, but if I got him in a room and I was given a few questions, one of them would be, why did you take the chance in 2007 when you were caught after Eric Mangini, who was coaching the Jets, got a warning to you not to do it in his house, not to do it in his building? I'm just surprised you didn't suspend the operation for a week, because you got caught and it changed the way America looked at your organization and you. And I just didn't think the payoff was worth that gamble. And I have an interesting story in the book about an FBI agent, an undercover police officer, and a state trooper who ended up in the middle of that Spygate debacle, really, that day at Giant Stadium. They refereed a dispute in a back office between the Jets, who wanted that camera put in the NFL's hands, and the Patriots, who had a security chief named Mark Briggs, who was saying, you guys are stealing our camera, give it back. And had those three officers given that camera back to the Patriots, which they almost did, Spygate never would have happened.
You also have an interesting take on Deflategate, because Belichick, as you say, that was not his, that he was not intimately involved in that. But what is interesting is he had real doubts about Tom Brady's claim of innocence, and that caused a fracture between the two.
Yeah, Joe, Belichick wasn't alone. There were a lot of people in that building who had serious doubts about Brady's story, particularly after his performance in that press conference where he was asked rather dramatically, America wants to know if Tom Brady is a cheater, and he gave a very wobbly, indecisive, I don't believe so answer, which ended up convicting him in the court of public opinion, at least outside of New England. But the Brady camp was not happy with Belichick when he, in his press conference, told reporters to ask Brady about his preferences as they relate to game balls, and kind of dropped it right in Brady's lap. And Brady's camp wasn't happy when Kraft surrendered to the league in the spring of 2015 rather than fight the suspension. And so a lot of people were unhappy with a lot of people at the top of that organization. At the end of the day, despite the four-game suspension of Brady, they won the Super Bowl again after he came back. So some people subtract a lot from the Patriot legacy because of the two gates. I don't, because I think without them, they still win five championships and 15 division titles. So I don't think that's Belichick's legacy. I think his legacy is he just outworked and out-detailed people and ended up getting a little lucky with the greatest quarterback and football player of all time.
And it's safe to say, I mean, you touched on this a moment ago, but he's a great coach, one of the greatest coaches. He will go beyond that if he wins six, right?
Well, I went to the high school in New Jersey, St. Cecilia's of Englewood, where Vince Lombardi coached. Lombardi had only been a head coach two places in his life, Green Bay Packers and St. Cecilia High School. And so it's hard for me to ever put somebody above Lombardi, but I think Belichick is already there. If he gets a six, he breaks the tie with Lombardi, so that would be a pretty significant milestone for him. And I think he's already the greatest ever. When you consider, I would put him one, I would put Lombardi two, and probably Paul Brown three. But when you consider that the modern NFL is designed to prevent you from doing exactly what Belichick has done in building a dynasty, the salary cap, free agency, the draft, the schedule, all designed to bring you from the top back down to the middle, if not the bottom, and elevate the bottom feeders to at least the middle. Parity is a virtue in the NFL, and Belichick has defied that, and because of that, I put him at the top of that historical list.
What you just said partially answered my next question, but I'm interested in just going a little bit deeper in it as we wrap up, and that is, you would think that the NFL would just revere this guy as one of their great heroes, and yet it seems, at least from this fan's perspective, that they really don't care for him very much.
Well, there's a lot of resentment around the league and people who thought he got off easy even in Spygate, and resentful of the way Kraft and others fought against the Deflategate punishment ultimately. And, you know, Bill's, when he's working or competing against you, he's not a fun guy to be around. He's just, even though I've talked about and in the book present a lot of stories and anecdotes about the human Bill away from the stadium, when he's working, he's a difficult guy to be around, whether you're on his side, and certainly more difficult if you're on the other side. So I understand that feeling, and outside of New England, in a lot of ways, he's despised. But it's hard to look at his legacy and say anything but, well, maybe we didn't love this guy, but you have to give him his due as the greatest NFL coach there's ever been. And I think when he retires, maybe people will appreciate that outside of New England a little bit more. But until then, he'll drive for number six, and I do think he'll get there. I think the partnership has one more ring left in it, and then it'll be time to perhaps go their separate ways.
The name of the new book is Belichick, The Making of the Greatest Football Coach of All Time. The book is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. Ian O'Connor, thank you very much for spending time with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Same here. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you. Again, the name of the book is Belichick. It's published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.